Yes, we were there. Kate and I were at the new recording studio open house this past weekend, and the Bomba workshop. We intend to be at the found footage of Bethlehem Archive film night, the teen cupcake decorating event, the book bingo for school kids, and of course, the Celtic Knot workshop. It's all happened, and is happening, at the Bethlehem Area Public Library, which provides a magical, mystical offering of events year-round, including our topic for tonight, the Finding HD Library Talk Series. It is part of the Finding HD Project, a year-long community exploration of the life and the work of the Bethlehem-born writer Hilda Doolittle, better known as HD. Listen. Listen. You can almost hear her words. You can almost feel HD's presence in our studio today. Coming up in February, 26, that's tomorrow, our guest, Craig Atwood, professor of Moravian Theology at Moravian, shares his research and study with his talk, HD's Moravian Roots in Bethlehem. And on March 6, Professor Mary Foltz's HD talk is titled Challenging Limited Understandings of Gender and Sexuality. This is WDIY 88.1 Lehigh Valley Public Radio, and you are tuned into Lehigh Valley Art Salon. I remain George Miller, and along with my wife and co-host, Kate Scuffle, today we explore some of the many offerings at the public Bethlehem Area Public Library, specifically the exciting ongoing HD project. We chat today with Seth Moglen, professor of English at Lehigh University, and Finding HD collaborator and author, and with Craig Atwood, professor of Moravian Theology at Moravian, and a rediscovery of the riches of the Moravian theology heritage, including HD's Moravian roots. And we hear some of the poetic words of HD offered by Lehigh students Blanche Wang and Alyssa Solik. Welcome.
Thanks, George and Kate. It's a pleasure to be here on the show again. We have two enormously exciting talks coming up. I hope folks will be able to have a chance to check those out. The first, and you'll hear more from Craig himself in a few minutes, I just want to encourage people to understand what a remarkable opportunity this is for them to hear one of the leading scholars of the Moravians and of Bethlehem's founders, Craig Atwood, talk about how this extraordinary poet who changed the shape of 20th century literature emerged out of the very, very particular religious and spiritual and cultural vision of the early Moravians. It's an extraordinary opportunity coming up tomorrow night, as you were saying, February 26th at 6:30 at the library. And the talk by my Lehigh colleague Mary Foltz will give people a chance to hear how this remarkable feminist poet, who was also a real ambitious radical in her personal life, how HD can help us almost 100 years later unthink some of what we are still struggling to make sense of about gender and sexuality.
That's absolutely fantastic. And this, as you mentioned several times, is a year-long project. So there are many, many more things to encompass in this whole project.
Yes. People should look out. The Finding HD project is going to take place over a full calendar year. We've already had several events. There are going to be more library talks after Craig and Mary's talks coming ahead. There will be walking tours here in the city of Bethlehem for people to understand the particular places that shaped the remarkable poet, HD. We will have projections. Some of you will be amazed to see images of HD and lines of her poetry projected on buildings around the city. There's going to be a portrait unveiled at the Bethlehem Public Library in the main atrium of HD. And all of this is culminating in what should be a remarkable play original theater production created by Doug Royston of Mock Turtle Marionette Theater and directed by Jenny Gilrain, which will take place in October as part of the Festival Unbound project. And so these two upcoming library talks are two of many, many moments at which we are hoping people throughout the city of Bethlehem and the Lehigh Valley will have a chance not only to learn about this remarkable visionary poet, H.D., but also for us as a community to understand something about who we are by engaging with one of our most influential artistic influences.
And of course, Kate.
I was going to say, it's interesting, we were talking a little bit before the show, and you had said, Seth, that what's one of the things that's exciting about this for, I would assume you both, is that it's you'd be used to sharing this, perhaps, or sharing HD in a classroom, but it's exciting to take the community on this ride, on this year-long journey of discovery. And I'm just curious, Craig, how did you, you're a renowned scholar on Moravian spirituality, history, etc., but HD, how has HD always been part of that journey for you, or is that a newer piece of the journey to be seeing how HD informs that, or how it informs HD's work in life?
Yes, I only discovered HD a few years ago. I was actually in grad school and was beginning my dissertation on the Moravians, and one of my fellow grad students at Princeton accosted me in the cafeteria one time. He was a big Ezra Pound fan, and so he knew HD through Ezra Pound, and he just out of the clear blue said, "So, is it true that the Moravians used to worship the bloody side wound of Christ?" And I said, "Well, yes. Why are you asking?" And so he told me about HD, you know, and the evocative imagery and her poetry as an imagist poet. And I read a little at that time, but kind of set it aside for other things. And then a woman named Jane Augustine did a published HD's unpublished novel, The Mystery. And I did a review of it and was reading what she had a lot to say about the Moravian aspects of that book, some of which was quite perceptive and some of which was based on outdated research. Okay. And so she and I corresponded on that actually the Moravian things are much more exciting than she realized in doing HD. And then Lehigh had this HD conference a couple of years ago, and I thought, well, I'll just dive into this. And I have to admit, I'm not great with poetry. So I have focused mainly on her prose writings, the Gift and the Mystery, which were her later works.
But they also, my sense is that makes sense. They speak very much to the gift is involved with this Moravian journey for her, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm wondering if, without spoilers, if we could talk a little bit about, for the average person out there going on this journey, what is it they need to know? What is it that you can offer them that informs HD in terms of, because I would tend to agree with you, I don't think we think we know what the Moravian experience is, or we think we have this kind of thing frozen in amber, you know, this historical whatever. And it's both politically, spiritually, theologically, and in every way, radically, socially, much more of an interesting journey than I think most people are aware, and a more interesting environment for this girl to have grown up in, this child.
Oh, yes. And part of what attracted me to HD is she had this sense that her Moravian heritage was much more rich and radical than the church she experienced. And so you get a lot of creative figures who have to reject their religious upbringing to explore their artistry, and they always struggle with that. There's some of that with HD as she's embracing, you know, the Hellenic traditions and Egyptian religion. But as she got older and did psychoanalysis with Freud, she was convinced that much of her own gift came from this rich Moravian heritage, and she started following clues that had always been there but had been suppressed by the church. And that led her into what much more of what Bethlehem was in the time of Count Zinzendorf. And that goes right along. I resonate with that because that's my own path. I grew up Moravian, struggled with it, Moravian in North Carolina, got into my research, and it was so exciting to find out that this church in the 18th century really was one of the most radical organizations in the world. I've at conferences, I've challenged scholars to prove me wrong when I say that in the 18th century, the Moravians were the most gender-inclusive, egalitarian, multilingual, multicultural organization in the Western world. And so far, no one's come up with anyone more so. The Quakers come close, but the Moravians, in some ways, were the Quakers were very English. And the Moravians had this this outreach to Native American peoples, learning languages. This for the talk tomorrow, we'll look at a particular section where HD imagines gatherings of the Moravians and the Native Americans and the shared spirituality. The Moravians were one of the few Christian groups that had a sex-positive spirituality. For much of Christian history, and we're seeing this with the news, you know, with that the Vatican is dealing with, celibacy has been the preferred, the higher spirituality. Moravians believe that sexual relations within the confines of marriage, but that that sex was actually a form of prayer. It was a the sexuality was sacramental. They worshipped here in Bethlehem the Holy Spirit as the mother. So in the 1750s here in Bethlehem, they had whole festival days to the motherhood of the Holy Spirit and elaborate prayers and liturgy celebrating God as a mother for us and how the mother not only, you know, gives us life and nurtures us, but admonishes us and teaches us right from wrong. Zinzendorf, who HD was fascinated with, even declared that he believed that all people have feminine souls. And so men are, you know, physically, biologically male, but in their essence are feminine. And so there's this spiritual androgyny that runs through 18th century Moravian spirituality. And HD was limited with what was available to her historically. She did research, but with language and the state of scholarship, I think she would love to know what what Moravians were like at the time. Even she had inklings of it. She felt this connection, but there's actually more to it than even she was aware of.
Well, certainly then her upbringing was affected, certainly very strongly, by the Moravian community. And I think that, to put it all in perspective, really, for some of our listeners who don't really know who H.D. is. In fact, when I said we were going to do a show on it, they said, oh, you mean that young girl in the movies that spoke Cockney? I said, no, that's Eliza Doolittle. That's not Hilda Doolittle. There's quite a difference between the two. Hilda was born in 1886 here in Bethlehem and passed away in 1961 after a stroke. So we wanted to put all that in perspective so that people...
For the timeline.
For the timeline, so that they can understand more about this wonderful woman who brought us many ideas, thoughts, and ideas. We certainly want to know more about this, and we shall return momentarily to learn more of HD, her adventures with Ezra Pound, perhaps, and her legacy, right after this salient message.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
We're back. This is Lehigh Valley Arts Salon, and we're talking about the Finding HD project, which is culminating all year. It's taking a full year to cover HD, and it surely is because she's so fascinating. Seth Moglen is here, a professor of English at Lehigh University, and he'll introduce one of our Lehigh students.
So for people just tuning in, you have a chance in the months ahead to learn about an extraordinary feminist poet, novelist, and memoirist, Hilda Doolittle, born and raised here in Bethlehem. H.D. published a dozen volumes of poetry, several memoirs. She wrote many novels. And I've had the pleasure over the years of teaching H.D. in a number of classes at Lehigh. And I want to introduce you to two students of mine who explored one of H.D.'s most important works, a sort of feminist and anti-war poem, a book-length poem called Trilogy, one section of which is called The Flowering of the Rod. And Alyssa Solog is going to tell us a little bit about what appealed to her about this poem, and she's going to read a portion of it for you.
Welcome, Alyssa.
Thank you. Hi.
Hi.
So I think the thing that just first really drew me to H.D. was that I think people can be a little bit intimidated by poetry. I feel like they think it's a secret club or there's a secret language that you need to know to understand it. And what I really liked about H.D.'s work was that at its simplest, it's very melodic and it's very evocative with her imagery. But I felt like the imagery is very powerful, but it's still very approachable. So you can just enjoy her poems on that surface level, but you can also then go dig deep down into the many layers that exist within that. So I'm going to read the second poem from The Flowering of the Rod. I go where I love and where I am loved, into the snow. I go into the things I love with no thought of duty or pity. I go where I belong, inexorably, as the rain that has lain long in the furrow. I have given or would have given life to the grain. But if it will not grow or ripen with the rain of beauty, the rain will return to the cloud. The harvester sharpens his steel on the stone, but this is not our field. We have not sown this. Pitiless, pitiless, let us leave the place of a skull to those who have fashioned it.
Wow. How about your thoughts?
I really like this poem because I feel like it just speaks to finding your place. And I think there's a good pull between turning towards what you love and turning away from things that aren't serving you, turning away from the place of death and the unyielding harvest. I think it speaks a lot about rebirth, but really the thing that I like the most about it is that image of the rain returning to the cloud.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And if you're like me, this poetess really affects me in many ways, emotionally as well as visually.
Mm-hmm.
We can jump back at the moment when she is telling us about these things, when she's saying what she is. And I think that that's really important.
Yes.
And I'm curious, too, for both of you, maybe, Lance, after you read, I just want to ask you a little bit about how H.D. resonates with you as women, as students and writers. You know, it's part of, I think, something that's very part of her impact and as she would desire it to be. But, Blanche, what have you chosen?
Yes, Blanche Wang.
Perhaps why?
I choose a poem in The Flowering of the Rod as well. Do you want me to answer a question relating to women?
Well, whatever's comfortable for you. If you'd rather read it and then we'll chat a little, that would be grand.
I feel that I really like her poem, and when I first read her poem, I was not thinking that I would fall in love with it, but after I read it, I really like her language and the preciseness of her language. So I am going to read a poem about hope, desire, and the loss of desire, and how she designed a strategy to reclaim the desire. It's the poem 5 of Flowering of the Rod. Satisfied, unsatisfied, satiated or numb with hunger. This is the eternal urge. This is the despair, the desire to equilibrate. The eternal variant, you understand that insistent calling, that demand of a given moment, the will to enjoy, the will to live, not merely the will to endure. the will to flight, the will to achievement, the will to rest after a long flight. But who knows the desperate urge of those others, actual or perhaps now, mythical birds who seek but find no rest till they drop from the highest point of the spiral or fall from the innermost center of the ever-narrowing circle. For they remember, as they sway and hover, what once was, they remember, they remember. They will not swerve, they have known bliss, the fruit that satisfies, they have come back. What if the islands are lost? What if the waters cover the Hesperides? They would rather remember, remember the golden apple trees. Oh, do not pity them, as you watch them drop one by one, for they fall exhausted, numb, blind, and in certain ecstasy. For theirs is the hunger for paradise.
Sorry. I can tell you why. I'm in fact, no. So, and why particularly that piece? Why does that?
Because her hope to reclaim desire really resonated with me. Mm-hmm. And I feel the feeling of loss is something that most people can relate to. In face of loss, people need time to figure out the problem, how they readjust to their lives. And during that process, usually their emotions are not understood by people. And HD really her strategy of reclaiming the hope drastically really resonated with people and justify their emotions of losing the hope, the desperation.
And if I might, for both of you as women, and again, it may be sexist of me to assume that that's, but no, for both of you as women, what does HD and her writing, how does it resonate with you? What does it mean to you? And does it mean anything special to you in those terms? Or her life as well?
Well, I think it's really interesting that after all this time, we're still sort of fighting to find our place as women. And so I think if we really want to move forward as a community, not just as women, but even I think as artists, if you want to foster that kind of community, you have to go back to where you came from, and you have to sort of understand the struggles that went on previously, so then you can sort of contextualize where you are in your space and how you want to move forward. And I really like that legacy feeling that comes with art, whether it be literature or music or theater, that there is a sense of legacy that people leave to us, and we can really get in touch with that when we look at HD's work. And then throughout this project that's ongoing, we get to feel like we know her a little bit better. And I think that that kind of can help us figure out how we want to move forward or where our place is and how we see that.
I think it's interesting listening again even to both pieces, particularly perhaps yours, Blanche, that sense of a woman in that time and moment, even now, being open about very lush, passionate language, about desire, about hope, about working through that community connection, not just honoring it, but investigating it. Is that...
Yeah, I think she is very brave, very courageous in a sense. And I also love the piece of poem Alyssa read. She, in the poem, HD talks about the pitiless, and she wants to live like without pity, either to other people, pity towards other people, or she refused to let other people pity her, as the poem I read. So I think that's how she lived her life, which is very inspiring, and her pursuit for kind of the freedom and go to where she loved is very daring.
Very brave. It's interesting. I would encourage folks to consider, again, joining the community for the Finding HD journey, and starting with tomorrow evening's talk at the library with our guest, Craig, who will talk a little bit about, Craig Out will talk about how that past, that ancestry, that journey how it maybe led or contributed to that bravery or the restlessness or the sense of poetry in life. The Moravian, the family, the generations, the place, and all of that, and its impact on HD's life. But I really would encourage folks to start. It's a wonderful way to kind of start the journey, I think, too, for HD, is that we're spending time learning so much about her and the pieces that go into this story as we move on. So, and
also, we would encourage folks to get to the March 6th Professor Mary Foltz's HD talk entitled Challenging Limited Understanding of Gender and Sexuality. This has been a wonderful program. Thank you, Seth Moguls. Thank you, Craig Atwood and Blanche and Alyssa, for being with us to share these thoughts and ideas about a fantastic year-long project that we're all looking forward to very excitedly as it culminates at the Bethlehem Area Public Library.
And I just want to remind our student guests were Blanche Wang and Alyssa Solik, just in the interest of women having last names.
Yes. You're right. You're absolutely right. Because of time, I was rushing. Sorry. Special thanks to Steve Aronson, our technical engineer and partner in bringing you adventures in the Lehigh Valley art offerings, cultural discussions, the humanities, and the art and the magic of radio. Thanks, Uncle Stevie.
You're welcome.